Well, like I said, we're just starting in on our new series today, which is exciting for me. We're still in the general epistles. So these general epistles, you know, if you're familiar with the New Testament, really they come after Paul's letters. And as a church, as Twin Cities Church, we've spent a lot of time in Paul's letters over the years, specifically Colossians and Ephesians in our house churches. And so it's exciting now to go through these general epistles. And these general epistles really serve as an encouragement and as a reminder for us of so many things. And today we're going to look at, and well, for the next 6 weeks, we're going to look at the two letters of Peter. Right? So if you're familiar with Peter, he writes letters to us, to the church, to Paul's church, and we're going to look at those today. So to start with, though, you know, to understand where Peter is coming from, we have to talk a little bit about home. Right? We have to talk about home. The longing for home. We all desperately want to go home. Right? Can you think of a more powerful image or powerful desire in your own life or anyone's life than home? What that evokes? It's something that is in us, and you see it in our culture, we see it in our souls. There's something about going home that evokes very strong emotions and strong desires. You know, those long rides home from college, I remember this, you know, coming from Chicago, going to Brainerd. Boy, once I made it to the Minnesota border, it was clear sailing, even though I still had a long way to go. But you know home is coming, right? It's that image of home. I remember a job I had when we were first married that I didn't enjoy very much, working at a law firm for a while. Oh, but that stretch of road, 77, coming around the lakes there around up in Brainerd, taking this curve, and there's a tree and a lake, and it's like, oh, I'm home. I know I'm home, right? Just that feeling. But for many of us, though, too, home is not doesn't bring up good images or good memories. For many of us, home was never a place where you want to be, but a place you're always trying to get away from. But we have this desperate desire for a true home, or for a place where there can be rest. Biblically, home is a place where life flourishes fully. Right? That's what we are meant for. We are all meant to be home, and it's a place where life flourishes, a place where there is spiritual flourishing, physical flourishing. Socially, there's a flourishing and a joy. It's a place where your physical life and your health get sustained when you're home. It's a place where our most intimate love relationships get nurtured, right? Home, where there is love, a deep intimacy and love when you're home. It's a place of ultimate rest, right? If I can just get home, I will find rest. In the Old Testament, it's a place of shalom. It's a place of peace. It's a place where the fabric of our life is complete. Right, where there is no rips or tears in that fabric, but it's home. I'm secure. I can live here. There is love here. There is justice here. There is peace and there is rest when we are home. And we all know that we were meant for that. We were all meant to find home. We were all meant for shalom. We were all meant for that peace. But we can never find it. Right? We always are searching for that peace. We're always looking for home, and we never quite find it. There's a tremendous disappointment in our lives. Right? And if we open ourselves up and we actually look at our lives and we look at the things around us, we find a disappointment. Henry's up in Children's Church, so I'll use him as an example. But at his birthday party, his most recent birthday party, he begged to have a big birthday. He'd been wanting a big birthday party. We haven't given him a big birthday party in years, and so he's just been a few friends. He really wanted all of his school friends, and so we did it. Fine, we had a huge party, and it was a ton of work and all those things, and he raked it in with the gifts. I mean, just, he had so many presents, and it was great. Because these are Woodbury families, so we got good gifts. It was awesome. And he got all these gifts and he opened them up. And that night, though, he cried in his bed when I was putting him to sleep. I was like, Henry, why are you crying? What's wrong? You know, he's like, Dad, I was so excited to get all these presents, but now that I've opened them and played with them, I'm not really happy. I don't really want them anymore. Right? And it's just, that's us. That's life. Right? He's just articulating what we all feel. I finally got what I wanted. And this is what I've got. I don't like it anymore. I want something else. I'm disappointed. I thought this would bring me such happiness. I thought this would bring me such peace. I thought this would bring me home. But it didn't. It didn't. So what do we do with all those feelings? You know, C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity talks about this disappointment. He says there's three options. There's the way of the fool, which we see everywhere, right? This coming out of Proverbs, that says the reason you're disappointed is the things. Right? Why am I so disappointed? Well, it's the thing's fault, right? Why does this job not satisfy me? Because I'm in a bad job. I need to find a new job. Why does this relationship not give me the intimacy and the love that I think it should? Because this is the wrong woman for me. This is the wrong man. I should find another. So you go from thing to thing to thing, and you're constantly trying to fill your life with things. This will bring me home. This will give me peace. This will be it. Think of your houses, right? And I've talked about this before. Oh, the idolatry of houses, of homes, right? Because that's what we so desperately want. We want a home. And so we're after it all the time. And we get disappointed with our homes once we live in them for a while. So that's why we make improvements to our homes. That's why we add on. And it's why we redo things and repaint and add decks or porches. And constantly searching for what will bring us satisfaction. It's the way of the fool. You're constantly looking for things. The other way Lewis argues for is that there's the way of the disillusioned man, which just gives up. You see this in culture too. Say, well, look, nothing can satisfy me. So I'm going to stop. I just know that nothing satisfies. So that's it. I just go through life very stoic, very closed off. I will not love. I will not get attached. I will not care about the things in this world because I know that the things can't give me any joy. So you live a life of detachment, a life of high walls, right? Of no intimacies, of no hopes. Say, I've been burned enough times. I don't care anymore. And that makes sense, that view, if this was it. And the third option is the option that we have available to us, which is the Christian way, which is a way of hope. Knowing that the things in this world cannot satisfy me, which tells me that I was meant for something else. I don't give up hope. I just know that I was meant for more than this. And Scripture explains what's going on for us. It tells us from Genesis through Revelation that what we are experiencing is a life of exile. Our home has been lost. It's gone. It's been distorted. It's been defaced. It's no longer there for us. We can't go home. Death and disease and violence has ruined our homes. The world that we live in is not our actual home, and we know that. We know that this is not the place we were meant for. Society, as we look around it, you know, to have biblical Old Testament imagery, right? Society is just a babble. It's just filled with selfishness, self-exaltation, and pride. Society is full of violence. It's full of disappointment. It's full of sin. We know that this cannot be our home. Violence and exploitation ruin everything, and it ruins community, right? We see this everywhere around us. We know that we are made for someplace else. We know that we are made for a place without death, without the parting of love. We wouldn't have to say goodbye to loved ones anymore. We know that. We know that we were made for a place where there won't be decay, where there won't be disease, where there won't be aging. We know this and we feel this in our very souls, which explains for us our disappointments with the things in our life because they were never meant to satisfy me, and our outrage when we see the injustices of the world, when we see the violence that mars communities, that takes people's lives, we think of Charleston just recently or any of these innumerable events. You look through, right, your Twitter feed or your news or whatever, and it's just violence and ruined communities. And home is not safe. No place is safe. Right, the very place I've been trying to create for myself to find my peace and rest, all of a sudden I realize it's not a safe place and that violence has touched it and will touch it. We live in a place that's not our home. We're exiles, and we know why we're exiled. Scripture has been clear on this level. It's because we've turned from God to live for ourselves that we've ruined our home. Our first parents did this in the garden. If you're familiar with the story in Genesis, they chose themselves and not God, and they ruined it. And I do the same thing. We've been banished from home, from the very presence of God, because I chose myself, so I can't have God. I can't go home. We were alienated from Him, from ourselves, from one another, from the creation and what the creation should really look like. We're in a state of exile. And the Old Testament gives us a beautiful picture of that. God uses the nation of Israel to show us who we are and what we're going through. Israel is exiled multiple times in Egypt and in Babylon, and saying, this is us. This is God's people. We are exiled. We are not in our land. We are living in a place we were not designed to live in. And while we live in this place, we're called to faithfulness. We're called to trust God. We're called to love Him. We're called to wait for Him. We're called to experience that love and just be faithful. But just like Israel, we're not faithful. We're terrible at waiting. Israel was called to wait. They were called to be faithful, even in the exile, knowing that God would bring them back to their land if they just waited for Him. We have the same position. I'm waiting and waiting, but we're really bad at waiting. We choose ourselves sin. We choose sin. We choose ourselves. We don't wait patiently. We can't go home, right? I'll never be able to go home in this state that I'm in. And it's in that position of exile where Peter wants to tell us who we are. And this is the way that Peter begins his letters to the church. So we find ourselves today in that position of exile, wanting to go home, desperate to go home, knowing that this world that we live in is not it. And as much as we try to make it our home, it's not going to be our home. Just like Israel, as much as they tried to make Babylon their home, it was never meant to be their home. Or Egypt, it's not your home. This is not our home. This world is not my home. It's not what I was meant for. But I find myself here. And the church finds itself in that position. And what's interesting about the letters of Peter is that he's writing again to this early church, to us, in a lot of ways. And for the early history of the church, right, the church is founded very closely after Christ's death. Paul travels throughout Asia Minor. You probably know this through Turkey today. He founds these churches. They've read these books like Colossians and Ephesians, just like we've read. This church is very much like our church. They know the gospel. They've experienced the gospel. They've chosen Christ. They're living in Him, all of these things. And for the first several years of the church, things were going pretty well, pretty smoothly. If you just read Ephesians and Colossians, right, you kind of walk away saying, oh, this Christian life's going to be pretty great. My life is going to be marked by unity and love. We're going to grow more and more in Him, stable, steadfast, mature. We're going to win this world for Christ. We're going to reveal the manifold wisdom of God. This is going to be wonderful. And the only persecution that the church was really encountering during Paul's time was at the hand of the Jews. Right? When Paul would show up, his apostles would show up, when his ministry team shows up, right, the Jews would also persecute them, and they'd raise a ruckus and a rally or things like that. They'd try to throw Paul in jail, the other leaders of the church in jail. But by and large, the church was doing okay. They weren't experiencing huge, widespread persecution. And a big part of that was because Christianity, for those first you know, really 30 years of the church, was able to kind of escape under the radar. Nobody in culture really kind of knew what was going on because they assumed that they were Jews, which makes sense. Paul was going to the synagogues first. It was the Jews first, then to the Gentiles. And so it's like, all right, well, we know about Jews. The Jews have been living in society. The Romans were very comfortable with Judaism. It was a legal religion to be a Jew. They didn't realize what Christianity really was. So first, on the front level, it was just, we just have more Jews in our city, which is fine. They stick to themselves. They have their own little separate communities. They're not proselytizing anybody. We don't mind the Jews. But as Christianity continues to flourish and the gospel continues to grow, you find more and more and more conflict. James gets killed. He's the first of the big apostles to die. He dies in the 50s. Paul gets killed in 64. Peter is going to get killed in 67. Right? All of the apostles are dying. All of the leaders of the church are going to be killed except for John. John's going to make it till his old age. But he's it. Everything turns very, very quickly. Claudius, one of the emperors of Rome in the 50s, he's had enough of this Christian thing. He doesn't realize there's Christianity, but because of this allegiance to Christ, and he hears about this Christ figure, he kicks all of the Jews out of Rome. Right? He doesn't know there's a distinction. So he just says, the Jews are acting crazy. Right? They're no longer worshiping the emperor. They're no longer paying their taxes and tithing to the emperor. They're not offering at this cult to the emperor. Let's just kick all of the Jews out of Rome. So the emperors are starting to figure this out. Nero comes next. He quickly figures it out. He's the one who kills Paul. He kills Peter. He starts killing Christians by the thousands in the Colosseum. The culture is shifting for the church. The culture has shifted to where you finally have this. These things cannot coexist easily. The empire and the kingdom of God no longer seem to coexist. So the church is finding itself in the middle of a culture that's growing in its antagonism towards them. And when you think about the message of the gospel, you can understand. I mean, if I was in power, I would be uneasy with Christians as well, who say, Jesus, this man from Palestine is Lord. Dominus, Lord. That was the title given to the emperor. No, the emperor is not my Lord. This man from Palestine, he's Lord. He is my true king. My full allegiance is to him. I will die for Christ. My true family, my true ethnicity, my true identity is part of his family. I'm not a Roman. I'm not a Greek. I'm not a Jew any longer. I'm not even a man anymore. I'm not even a woman. I am in Christ. My identity is in him. I trust him. He's in charge. He's the one I answer to. He's the one I'm giving my life for. The handwriting's on the wall for that gospel to rankle the culture. Culture is not going to be able to coexist with that message. Who is your Lord? Who do you bow down to? Christianity is saying, Jesus. He is my Lord. He is my King. He is the one that I give everything for. So it's into this context that Peter writes. He sees Paul's churches. And he wants to encourage them. So it's us. It's our church. It's the church that has experienced Paul's Gospels. They're walking in Jesus. They've read Colossians. They've read Ephesians. They understand what it means to follow Christ. They want to follow him more. But the culture is turning against them. They are not in a position of favor anymore. Everyone's not just okay with them hanging out. Right, and in a lot of ways, modern Christianity is moving in that direction. We're under the kind of guise of traditional Christianity, everything's fine. Right? I don't have a problem with Christians. As long as you keep your faith private to yourself and they're really nice folks, it's totally fine. But when you actually start preaching the gospel, right now people don't appreciate that as much. And that's what the church is encountering, this persecution and just a world that is growingly it's growing in its antagonism towards them. But in the midst of that, there's still people coming to the faith. And Paul is out of the picture somehow. He's most likely right at death's door when Peter's writing. Paul is in Rome in chains, about to be beheaded. Peter is now in Rome as well to visit the church, to strengthen the church there, to strengthen probably Paul as well, visit him. And he's writing now to Paul's churches. Paul probably can't write anymore. His writing is done. He's written his prison epistles. Now all that's waiting for Paul is his death. So Peter writes to Paul's churches on Paul's behalf, encouraging them. And this is the message of encouragement that he gives. So if you have a Bible, open up to Peter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1, we're going to look at a couple of passages here. So 1 Peter 1 and 2, and then 1 Peter 2, 11 and 12. So this is how Peter starts, right? This is how he starts. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to those who are elect exiles of the dispersion in Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia, according to the foreknowledge of God the Father, in the sanctification of the Spirit, for obedience to Jesus Christ, and for sprinkling with his blood, may grace and peace be multiplied to you. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to you who are elect exiles. And then he picks it up in chapter 2. Verses 11 and 12. So after, in between here, he's kind of reminded them of our calling, reminded of what Christ has done. 11 and 12. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh which war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God in the day of visitation. So right off the bat, he wants to say to you exiles, chosen exiles. He's using this Old Testament language. These are Gentiles. They're not Jews. They're probably some Jews, but primarily Gentile audience. And he's calling us exiles. He's saying, you exiled church, I want to urge you to live as exiles, as sojourners, people that are just traveling through. I urge you to live like an exile. I want to remind you that you are in exile. Throughout 1 and 2 Peter, the word remind is just, it's this constant reminding. He's not teaching them new things. He just wants to remind them of the things that they know and the things that Paul has taught them. I want to remind you, live like an exile. Remember that you are an exile. I urge you, keep your conduct honorable, so when they speak bad about you, not if they speak, when they speak bad of you, they will see who you really are, and they will glorify God. But only if you remember who you are. I urge you to live as exiles. And the term, it gives, right, and we think about it, I was thinking, if I'm Peter in this position, I don't think that wouldn't be the word that would first come to mind. If I'm writing to you, let's say if I'm separated from you, I would say, my dear brothers and sisters, my co-laborers in Christ. Right? I don't think I would use the word exile. It wouldn't come quickly to me as an option for what to call the church. But for Peter, that's what he wants to call us. And it gives the church a shared identity. Right? We're exiles. It gives you an identity. I don't know if you've been in a foreign country before for any extended period of time, but there's something about it, and especially about when you meet someone else, right? It's that aspect of like, I mean, when I'm here, right, I don't, I'm not that social. I don't meet a lot of new folks. But if you're over in a foreign country and you meet someone from America, instant best buddy. Oh, you're from America? Where are you from? Illinois? That's close enough. You know, and you're just excited to meet someone else that's like you, that's visiting, that's in exile with you, right? It's this bond now where you say, we're all in this. We're all exiles. Oh, I know you, right? Which is kind of that excitement. of believers, and you probably have maybe have experienced this too, where you've been in college or in some context and you meet a believer. Say, oh, right, or in a neighborhood, you move into the neighborhood. This is kind of for us, right? And you meet someone who's a believer, a genuine follower of Christ. And you're like, at last, hi, I'm a follower of Jesus. Where are you from? I'm from here. What church do you go to? I go to this one. There's an excitement about that. But you don't have that excitement if you don't think of yourself as an exile, right? As coming from somewhere else and going to somewhere else. If you think of yourself as a native, you're just like, oh, that's great. Oh, you're visiting? Great. I hope you have a great stay. Right? When someone introduces themselves and there's visiting the city, it's like, well, I'm excited to see you, but I know you're going to leave, and so I'm not really going to, you're not going to be my best friend because you're leaving. We're both leaving. We're both visiting. It gives you this shared identity, and it gives us a shared experience, and it starts to make sense for us both why we're experiencing the same things, why we experience the same longing, why we experience the same disappointment. Oh, do you weep for this culture like I do? Oh, do you see the injustice and the violence of this world, and does it break your heart just like it breaks my heart? Well, yeah, I understand now. We both are longing for the same thing. We both know what we've been called to. We both have the same impression upon us. And we both are going to the same place. Right? If I know that, right? Think of the bond that creates amongst a community when you know you've come from different places, but you know you're going to the same place. Again, it's that aspect of like being somewhere else. You know, you could be in a different state, a different country, and all of a sudden you meet somebody and you're both going to be going to the same place in the fall, right? You're both enrolling at the same school. Really? I didn't know that. You know, and it's this instant bond and a hope, a shared hope, a shared future to look forward to. We're all going home together. We're both visiting. The world is not our home. So when Peter tells us that, you chosen, you elect exiles, it's much like Paul told us, because it is, it's almost like being told you're adopted. I knew it. Right? There's that moment of like, I knew I was adopted. That totally makes sense now, right? Because it's like that explains everything. And it does, and it starts to explain things for us. Paul already told us that. You have been adopted. We have been taken out of this world. We have been brought into his family. We have been adopted. We have been elect. We are in exile. This world is not ours. These families are not our families. Our friends are not our friends. This place is not our place. Oh, that's why I don't fit in. Right? That's why I don't fit in this world. That's why I'm not happy. That's why my home doesn't really satisfy me. That's why no matter how much love I have between my wife and I, it's not what I want it to be. It's why no matter how much I invest and how much I try and strive, I can't find true peace and rest. I'm adopted. This isn't my home. I'm from somewhere else. I'm meant for somewhere else. This world can't satisfy me. Of course. What have I been doing? So we're in exile. That's the message that Peter wants to remind us. In the midst of our hardship, in the midst of our culture that seems to be spinning out of our control and of which I have nothing to do, right? No matter how much I try or don't try, Peter says, remember, you weren't meant for this world. Remember, this world is not home. You are in exile here. Which raises these great questions. If this is not my home, and I was meant for a true home, how do I get home? And when do I get to go home? And how are we going to get there? Because I think across the board, this is a human experience. Everybody's longing for home and trying to build their homes. Everyone's trying to get home. So where you put your hope, how you live your life is where you think home is. Right? You invest in what you think is your home. What you think brings you peace. What you think brings you happiness. That's where you're going to invest. That's where you're going to put your life in. That's what I'm going to pour myself into. Whatever I think is going to bring me peace. Whatever is going to bring me home. But the reality is, I can't do it. Just like Israel in the Old Testament, they couldn't bring themselves home. They never could. They always wanted to go home, and they never could do it. Never could bring themselves home. They were always waiting for the true king, the true judge, all of these things, and they never could do it on their own. I'm in that same place. I'm desperately trying to bring myself home. I'm desperately selfish. I'm desperately sinful. I can't go home. I'm not ready to go home. I'm not safe for home. If I go back, if I went back to that garden city, I would ruin it. I can't do it because of my sin. Someone is going to have to step in and bring me home. That's what had to happen to Israel. That's what has to happen to us. And the gospel gives us the answers here. And Peter reminds the church of this too. Remember, you're in exile, but remember how you're going to get home. Because if I just told you you're exiles, if I just said that this world is not your home, you say, fine, well, I'm going to work to get home. We're going to make this my home. Or I'm going to do what I need to do to get home. The work has been done. The gospel gives the answers of how we come home. Right? Well, we know this. If you don't know this, this is the story. Jesus leaves his true home. This is Philippians. This is throughout the He was home. He left home. He's even born away from his parents' home. He wanders his entire life without a place to lay his head, without a home. He's finally crucified. When he's crucified outside of the city gates. Sign of exile. A sign of complete rejection. Christ came. He left his home to take our place and experience our exile. He took on that alienated state that we experience. I can't be in God's presence. Jesus took that on. He experienced that same alienated state that the human race deserves. He is cast out so we can be brought home. Jesus' death and resurrection are the ultimate exodus, right? The ultimate escape from exile. He went through it. He went through the exile and he came home. When Jesus rises from the grave, he breaks the power of death and he becomes that living foretaste of the shadow, the first fruits of the new heaven and the new earth that will be our home. So Jesus takes our exile on himself. He takes the alienated state on himself and he dies. And he rises to show us what home is going to look like, of where we're going. He has and he will reconcile all things to himself. And he will remake this entire world into that garden city that we are so desperate for. And if this is true, if Jesus really is who he said he is, and in his death and his resurrection, it really accomplished what it accomplishes, wow. My life makes a lot more sense. It explains things. It explains why I'm tired. Are you tired? What a rhetorical question. We're so tired. We can't find any rest. How can I actually enter into God's rest? Because that's what he offers. The fabric of the world is broken. Our heart breaks when we see the violence done. How could there ever be justice in this world? We know that we were made for personal and interdependent community. I don't want to be alone. Even the most introverted of us don't want to be alone. We want to be known. We want to be loved. How is that ever going to be possible? The gospel explains my deepest longings and my deepest fears, because it explains the source of my disappointment and the source of my experiences. It's myself and my sin. And it actually gives hope. I have a true home waiting. I have nothing to do. I have been purchased. I have been redeemed. I am being brought home right now. I'm in exile. We're in exile together. This world is not our home, but we're not staying in exile. It's not a permanent exile. We're going home. Right? What good news is that? That's what the gospel offers, the good news that we are going home, not by our work, but by Christ. The alienated state, the longings and the disappointments, the heartache of this world will end. And I will be home one day. And even now, I can taste it. I can taste home. I can see it. I can feel it, right? In those relationships with people, in the love that I have with people, even in my physical home, in my neighborhood, in the church, I can taste home. And I know where I'm going. I know where we're going. And if that's true, there's a freedom. There's a freedom and a joy that comes from knowing our state of exiles. Right? There's a freedom that comes when you know you're just visiting a place. I was thinking about this. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but if I'm visiting, right, you do things with more abandon. Right? I have a lot more fun. I don't think about consequences quite as much. Right? When you know you're going to leave. I'm not as scared. I don't have as much fear. I enjoy myself more on vacation, right? Because you know you're on vacation. We can have a joy in this life. We can enjoy ourselves because this world is not my home. Now, that's not to say this is an escapism, you know, that we're trying to escape this world and that we just say, wow, whatever. I don't care what's going on in this world because this is not my home. No, because we know that that's not actually what's happening, but that home is coming here, which is even better news than us escaping here to go home, but that home is coming here. This place will be my home. It's not right now, but it will be. Which really, if you think about it, I can't even get my head around it fully, right? But that now I can live a life of abandon and freedom and enjoyment, but also with a long-term hope for the very things that I'm enjoying, right? Because I know that home is coming here. So Peter is reminding the church, are you tired? I know you're tired. I know that following Christ is hard. I know that being faithful to Him and living as the church is hard. There is persecution and there is suffering and there is rejection. It's time to go home. It's time to hope for home. It's time to find rest in the work that Jesus did to bring us home. Because that's what faith is. If you've always been confused a little bit about the gospel, what it means to have faith, that's it. What it means to have faith is to rest. Stop working. Stop trying so hard. It's counterintuitive. It's the opposite of religion. There's nothing you can do, and all the work has been done, so maybe you should take a rest. Maybe you should trust. That's faith. Rest, wait, trust, anticipation, joyful, eager, faithful anticipation for the day when we go home, when home comes here. But it's so hard, right? It's so hard to rest. It's so hard to just wait and look forward. You know, the issue is we have these false homecomings all the time, right? When we literally get a home, when we have a kid, when we have all these things, they're false homecomings, and we put all of our hope in them, and we get so excited for them, and we find that peace for a fraction of a second. Or we turn to things that we think will bring us peace, that we think will bring us home. We turn to sin, right? And sin is not just bad things. They're good things too. Sin is taking anything and making it an ultimate thing, right? Buying a home is a good thing. But when you make that your source of hope and peace and comfort, it's sinful. And it's wrong. It's idolatrous. Just as sexual immorality, which is a clear sin, right? If I go to sexual immorality to find my peace, home, feeling of comfort, sin. Whatever you are looking to give you comfort in life that's not Jesus Christ, that's sin. Don't settle for a false homecoming, Peter wants to remind us. Our true home is coming. Don't settle for these false homes, these idolatries of the world. And so really the message for us then as a church is to take heart. Take heart. Remember. Remind ourselves. And Peter in 2 Peter will say this, I will go to every effort, Peter says, to remind you, to make sure you're reminded of this. Right? I don't know what he did, if he sent more people or what. I want to remind you all the time of who you are. You need to remember this. So we as a church, we need to remember who we are. This is not our home. We are exiles here. Don't get caught up. Don't get comfortable. Don't think this is it, but take heart and expect what God has for us.